Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the first episode of The Why with Dwayne Wade. Now, I wanted to start this podcast because I'm retired from basketball and I have nothing to do. That's the first lie I told. I have so many things going on and so many things to do, but I thought it would be very important for me, as someone who's curious and someone who wants to learn, to have an opportunity to learn from people that I admire. People that I feel like are goats of their sports, people that are goats in their field, but just people who have interesting, inspirational things going on in life. And so I'm used to being on that side, but now I'm on this side. And so I kind of get to control the conversations. And I want it to be exactly that. I don't want it to be interview. I want it to feel like a conversation, some with friends, some with people that you might see me googly eyed over or admire. But just really a conversation that goes back and forth about what it takes to be successful, about what motivated you, about what your dogs eat, anything that we want to cover. I want to be able to talk about it. So as you guys see behind me, I was able to have a lot of successes in life. And I highlight my three NBA trophies, not because I'm only a narcissist, but because when you understand what goes into winning one trophy, and then you get to see two, you get to see three, I think you have a little bit more respect for, you know, the individuals that are part of that team. And so hopefully some of these conversations that we have with some great minds, can give you a little bit more insight and a little bit more background on what it takes to have a trophy, and not just in sports, in life. How do you get to that level, that top level that we all try to find? So when I first went to my team and sat down and said, hey, I think I'm ready to start having conversations. I want to start my own podcast. I had an idea in my mind at the time of what the name was going to be. And my first name that I came up with was Pantheon. And I came up with Pantheon because I was like, I want to sit down with great minds. I want to sit down with goats and, you know, the people who are at the top of what they do. And we went with that. My first episode, I got a chance to sit down with those individuals that to me are Pantheons. I got a chance to sit down with Dirk, Tony, Powell, at the Hall of Fame, and talk about being a Pantheon. But as I kept going, I started to think, I was like, man, I want this to be more conversation. And so I went with, you know what? How about conversation with Dwayne Wade? That was my second episode. I mean, that was my second name, a conversation with Dwayne Wade. I was like, that's easy. That's point blank. That's period. But it didn't feel like enough. It didn't feel like something that that I wanted this podcast to represent. And so we end up going with The Why with Dwayne Wade. And the reason it's called The Why is because my name is spelled D-W-Y-A-N-E. But for some reason, no matter if I was in grade school or no matter if I was at the Hall of Fame, I still see my name spelled D-W-A-Y-N-E. And so I want everybody to get the Y right. But also, outside of that, I want to talk about your why. I want to talk about why you get up every day to do what you do. I want to get into people's reasoning and their why. And it goes all over the place. Sometimes my why is my family. Sometimes my why is because someone said something to me or they yelled something to me. Whatever your why is, I want to get to that. And so the Why Podcast with Dwayne Wade, it fits not only everything that I've grown up dealing with the misspelling of my name and the misplacement of the why, but also really been intrigued to why we all do the things we do. Episode one was very special to me. We recorded it back in August, and it was the day before we were inducted into the Hall of Fame. As you guys understand and know about that time, it's an emotional time. You have all your family in town. It's a lot going on. And to be able to sit down and have this conversation with Tony Parker, Pau Gasol, and Dirk Nowitzki about our battles versus each other, about our family, about what makes us and what made us great, about what we're doing after the game, about those competition, those moments, whether we were talking about the Olympics in 08, whether we're talking about the 06 finals, and y'all know Dirk and I had to get a little personal on the 06 finals, or whether we were talking about just moments that we've watched as fans of each other. And also, too, sharing moments about our brotherhoods throughout the NBA, not just on our team, but throughout the things that connects us. And so conversations that has never been discussed with athletes was discussed on the Why Podcast. I really hope you guys enjoy listening to this episode as much as I did making it. Episode one of The Why with Dwayne Wade. It is Hall of Fame weekend. We are live at the Mohegan Sun, and I'm honored to be joined by three of the greatest players of all time. Class, everybody. Thank you. Four-time NBA champion, NBA Finals MVP, six-time NBA All-Star, Tony Parker. Welcome to the Pantheon.
Thank you.
Two-time NBA champion, six-time NBA All-Star, Pau Gasol. Welcome to the Pantheon. 14-time NBA All-Star, sixth on the NBA all-time scoring list, one-time NBA champion. We'll get to that later. Dirk, welcome to the Pantheon.
That doesn't sound good.
All right, fellas, let's get into this. As we sit here, we're one day away from getting those Hall of Fame jackets. Pau, I'll start with you first.
Okay.
What does this moment mean to you?
I guess it's a culmination, right? It's kind of like the icing on the cake, which, you know, is crazy to think about. But to me, what's really special, basketball is a team sport. We wouldn't be here, you know, if our teams that we were a part of, our teammates, our people around us didn't help us and do our job and perform at the highest level. So, to go together in a class with four guys, with three guys here, that my career has been very parallel to all of yours in a way. It's super special. Super special. I'm ready to put that. Hopefully it will fit the jacket, you know, to have my parents here, I wanted them to put that jacket on me. They brought me to this world, and that'll be very special. Just try to take it all in. As I told you earlier today on the golf course, try to take it in, enjoy it, share it with amazing people that we're tied forever at a higher level. I mean, this doesn't get much better than this.
Yeah, Tony,
kind of the same thing. Going through the process right now and writing the speech, it's been a crazy mix of emotion. I feel very nostalgic. I'm having my whole French mafia, you know, they all came, you know, I have a lot of people. So sorry for all the French people.
Mafia. But
it's going to be a lot of them this weekend. They all flew in. Just like to see like all the love, all the people that supported me through my whole career. And to basically celebrate all together one more time. I feel like I feel blessed. We've been watching like old games and watching finals games, and it's funny to go through those memories again, and to be all together and to share that with them. That's very important to me. I'm like you, Pa. I'm very close to my family, close to my brothers, and everybody is here. And I have a lot of connection with all of you guys. Dirk, I went to your Jersey retirement, and Pa, we played together in the Spain-France rivalry. D-Way, we played twice in the finals. And I'm going to say it again. Can't believe you're the favorite player of my little brother, but it's okay. You know what I mean? it's just been an unbelievable journey. And I feel very lucky to be here. And I've never thought somebody like me will experience something like the Hall of Fame. I dream about the NBA. I dreamt about being the first European point guard to make it in the NBA. But the Hall of Fame is a whole another level.
Yeah. So you've been watching old film to see how good you were? Is that
no. No. I knew I was good, but I still get mad when I miss shots and teardrops. I was like, it's funny, like you watch games and like my dad, you know, my dad, when he watch games, he's like a boxer, you know, he's like moves like this, you know, he watch the game and like, you know, we can't do anything about this game.
Right. Too late.
It happens already.
But it was funny though, to go through those feelings.
Definitely. Dirk?
Yeah, just super, super excited, super anxious now a little bit. The last few weeks were leading up to it now. I feel a little, at night I wake up, I got certain things go through my mind, I reflect, I got parts of my speech, you know, that I'm trying to, all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, then I can't sleep for an hour. So I'm ready to get this going, get this weekend going. Everybody's arriving today. I have a huge crew, huge family coming from Germany as well, so... Yeah, just excited, really, to get this going and have some fun with everybody that's here. And it's an honor. This is an amazing class, as all you guys said. And I'm so so humbled to be a part of it. So let's get this started.
I know it's your show, D, but I have a question. Right away, I have a question. I'm sorry. Do you realize that you're a Hall of Famer? And if not, when do you think you're going to realize you're a Hall of Famer?
I think it's going to take a while to set in. I mean, I'm sure we all, right? We all had a dream to play the game of basketball. We wanted to play in the NBA because it was the best league. Our favorite players in America for you guys and here for me were playing. And I was having a conversation with my father, and my father told me, he was like, you know, I always dreamed of my son going to the NBA, but I never dreamed of greatness. How do you dream of greatness? And to be able to sit here and to be here this weekend, like this is a level of greatness that I never imagined that I would be able to experience. I'm like you guys, I've been going through all emotions. I ain't been sleeping. This speech has been the bane of my existence. Like, I can't wait to get this speech out the way so we can move on and have a good time.
Sure.
But never thought I'd be sitting here being called a Hall of Famer. So.
I feel like when I'm going to walk the steps, and be in front of you guys, then I'm really going to realize, okay,
that's the moment.
I'm a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's the moment.
Like just walking those steps, it puts me back when I was like just drafted. You know, you walk those steps and you just got drafted, and you're like, man, I'm going to the NBA. Right. I got drafted. That's how I hope it will make the same feeling, you know, when I walk those steps and become a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's when it gets real. That's when it gets real. All right, listen. So we started at the Hall of Fame. I want to take it back to the beginning. So young Dirk, who did young Dirk want to be?
Well, first, actually, my first role model was my dad. He was a sports guy. He's played handball in Europe. So I started actually playing handball ever since I can remember. Then I played tennis. I was a decent tennis player. So I wanted to be like Boris Becker, you know, Boom Boom Becker. You guys remember him, legend.
Shout out to
my guy. And so those were some of my first sports heroes. And then I didn't start really basketball until I was about 12, 13, a little late. And then that was just around the 90s when Michael Jordan took over. And so I was diehard Bulls fan. You know, back in the days, there was no internet. You couldn't really catch that many games. So all the league was promoting was usually the Bulls. So we caught like one or two games live every once a week or twice a week. And it was usually the Bulls. So I was a diehard Pippen fan, loved his versatility. And loved MJ. I mean, he was the GOAT for me of all time. And then I was a diehard Chicago Bulls fan, and loved Charles Barkley later on too. He's actually the reason I played with number 11 when I started basketball, because my dad had 11 in handball. And then when I saw Charles in the 92 Olympics at number 14, I actually switched my number to 14 because I loved Charles as well. So those were some of my first idols when I got going.
So if I'm thinking about Charles Barkley game, I'm thinking athleticism. I'm thinking post up, and, you know, banging people.
Not thinking about me.
Why Charles Barkley?
I don't know. I love this intensity, man. I loved he was undersized, but what a beast, man.
He was a beast.
Unbelievable how he got it done there, and so explosive. I mean, I love watching athletic players, even though that wasn't really my game. that was definitely something that caught my eye, and he was just so explosive. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, he was. Powell, who did young Powell want to be?
I think my guy growing up was Tony Kukoc. Mm-hmm. I was able to call him, and he accepted the honor to be my presenter. Growing up, in Europe, he was the kind of the guy that stood out for me. He was very versatile, mm-hmm. even though he was a lefty. I played small forward until I was 18, 19 years old because I was so skinny. And, I felt more comfortable outside. And I didn't fully grow up to the 7'1 frame that I turned out to be. So Tony was, the guy, obviously, that he went and joined the Bulls. Mm-hmm. The 92 Olympics had a big impact. He was the guy, the European guy, that was up and coming. And, he had, and then obviously the Bulls and MJ and all that also had an effect. But, yeah, Tony was kind of like the guy that I wanted to emulate and kind of follow the steps and, inspired me to try to be another, or get to the NBA and follow that path.
Yeah. Tony, your dad is from Chicago. Shout out to Chicago.
Chicago.
Chi-town. So who did young Tony want to be?
So me, a little bit like you. Yeah. My favorite player was Michael Jordan. Yeah. My dad's from Chicago. We were huge Bulls fans. And so, I had posters of him. My room. I remember being 10 years old and being in Monaco. And I went to the game, the Dream Team. They played France for a friendly game before going to Barcelona for Olympics. And I was one of those kids who will go down and go watch it. France lost by 50, but,
that's not bad. Game.
It was my first time.
That's not bad. That was routine. Yeah, right?
Not too bad. And so I was just super excited to see my idol. And that's why I wear the number 9, because of Michael Jordan. You know, at the time in Europe, you can only have numbers, for the 15. So you couldn't get 23. So I'd be pissed when I was a kid. I was like, why you can't get 23? Why that role, only 4 to 15? Like, I didn't understand that role. And I wanted 23. And so when he played in the Olympics and he had 9, I was like, oh, I'm going to play with 9.
Oh, you were good. You got to pick your number when you was young?
Yeah.
Oh, I just got thrown a jersey.
I got lucky. But you're right. But that's why some of my jerseys, it's not 9, growing up, because then I was the little one. I was the rookie. So you can't choose your number.
Right,
So some of my jerseys are not 9, but most of the time they were 9.
So we talk about Michael Jordan. Obviously, I think all of us, we grew up, we're roughly around the same age. So we grew up in the era of, who would probably be our GOAT. Who is the European GOAT? Tony, who would be the European GOAT for you? What was that player that you would look at and say, this is a European GOAT? Either when you were young, or even now, who is that person?
My European GOAT is Dirk Nowitzki.
Okay.
I think he's the European GOAT, Then it's very debatable with Powell, because Powell won so much, at mm-hmm. the European level. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true, D. I wish sometime Pau Gasol was not born. I would have won a lot more gold medals and a lot sooner. But to me, is debatable, and what you take in consideration if you take the NBA or European. So I will go with 1A and 1B.
Okay.
And I say that sincerely, because no disrespect to the older guys, but when we all came, you know, in the league, that was the first time that with Dirk and Pau, you had NBA franchises started to believe that we can have a European player as our franchise player. And Dirk was the first one to do that, like to be the franchise guy.
Yeah.
And then Pau with Kobe, then me with Timmy and Manu. And then now you have a lot of European guys who are their franchise guys. But Dirk paved that way for us as Europeans. My thing was to become the first European point guard. But franchise is that's Dirk. And I'll see him like in front of him, like all the discussions every time we talk, you know, with Europeans, like any interviews you'll see of me, I always say Dirk.
That's Dirk, crazy. You agree with that?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
No, that's a tough question. That's a tough question.
I appreciate it.
But Dirk, my question to you would not be if you agree if you're the GOAT. But what are your feelings on? I think I knew Tony was going to say that. By the way, I knew he was going to say he was the GOAT, and I knew he was going to say he was second. I don't know why. What do you guys feel about Giannis and Jokic and these young guys? Because to me, you guys are the first wave of European superstars. Not good players, not even great players, but superstar players. So what do you guys feel about, and I'm asking this question because in America, it's a different battle between the next GOAT, right? Everybody's always, no one wants nobody to surpass them sometimes. How do you guys feel about this next wave of European players that are amazing players?
I'm actually more proud watching them, honestly. You know, we all know records are there to be broken, and stuff always happens. Somebody always comes along who's better and does better things or does more, is more athletic. I mean, it just happens. That's life. So I'm actually proud watching these guys. I mean, I see Luka every day, the stuff he does, and he'll be in the conversation for a long, long time. What Giannis is doing.
Luka is no Dirk. No, sorry.
Really?
No.
He's well on his way. He's well on his way.
My personal opinion.
He's well on his way.
He said he's well on his way.
He's well on his way. And then Jokic, what he's been doing in this league and dominating, and now he won his ring. So I'm proud watching these guys, and hopefully they can have amazing careers from here on out. And the whole GOAT debate is always tough, you know.
Yeah.
We go back and forth all the time. It's different eras. You know, I was a big, Schrempf was one of my idols who had a great career. There was a Dražen Petrović. You mentioned Kukoč, all these. Sabonis, actually, before he got hurt, was an unbelievable player.
Unbelievable.
And unfortunately, he blew his knees out, and we never actually saw the best Sabonis. But he would have been maybe even the GOAT of Europe. So it's always tough. It's fun for debating, but we'll never know. But it's amazing that I'm obviously we're all in this conversation, and that's already humbling to me.
Yeah, Tony, why is obviously Luka is very early in his career. We don't know what the end results would be, but why today do you say he's no Dirk? Why that?
Because for me to be in the conversation, you have to win a championship.
Oh well,
so that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah,
but I love GOAT debate. I have GOAT debates with my brothers, with my friends all the time.
Yeah.
It's like boat conversation. You know? It's like always like we're debating and debating. And to me, because I won a championship, I'm like, if you don't understand what it takes to win a championship, I don't think you should be in a GOAT debate.
Okay.
And to me, what I would add to that is also, I think it's important. So much about the debating of who's the GOAT or who's, you know, we have played in, there are different eras. I think what we can be really proud of is that we raised the level. And I think that's what you want to do with your journey. You raise the bar.
Yeah.
And then somebody will say, hey, that's the bar. I want to raise it higher.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Keep raising it higher. And then as Dirk was saying, when you see these European players now, Luka, Giannis also has done incredibly well. You know, you're proud to see
you're
that.
Proud, yeah.
I know you're proud to see that. You want him to do well. You want him to keep raising the bar, you know. Hopefully, you know, now, obviously Jokic has won the championship with the Nuggets. Giannis has won a championship with the Bucks. We'll see if Luka can do that with, you know, a lot of great players haven't won championships mm-hmm. in this game. It's hard to win
it's
a championship,
tough, yeah.
as Tony was saying.
Very
a lot of
hard.
Things have to come together.
Yeah.
You know, Dirk has played many seasons. We played many seasons. He's won one. You know, I won two. He's won four. It's hard, right? You have to have great teammates. You know, everything has to come together that season. So again, it's not so much about, it's about, have you done, extraordinary? Have you raised the bar? Have you done your best? Have you inspired others? Have you opened doors? That's why I always give a little extra for the guys that came before us when things were not, so normal for European players to be in this league, to be respected, to fight through a lot of biases potentially too that they probably had to fight, So we kind of benefited from those guys that did that work before us. And now hopefully the current guys feel like we have contributed for them to have the life and the opportunity that they have. So that's what I like.
For you, is it weird, like, as an American perspective, to go in the Hall of Fame with three Europeans, did you ever...
I'm a minority at this table. Yeah.
because I watched the documentary, the Redeem Team, and congrats to that. It was an unbelievable documentary. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. You was good with it?
I was great. Great with it. I was so happy.
That was my favorite course.
I was one of the marketing tools in the documentary. I was right there.
Yeah,
like,
you're important, bro.
I moved up.
In your perspective, and as you, as an American, and I know because of my dad is American, I know how proud Americans are to be the best, in basketball and to show that they're best. How do you feel about European basketball the way it is now and having a lot of top players there, Europeans, what you think and how you feel about that?
That's a great question.
Can you tell, by the way, he has a podcast too?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely I can tell. Three years of running. He's a vet at this.
I'm a vet.
I've never thought of it in that way. I think it's just so amazing for the game. Mm-hmm. To look at it and say, obviously it's 12 of us, going into the Hall of Fame, but, out of the guys in the NBA, that three out of four are international players. I mean, that just shows how amazing this game is. And for any kid in the world, it just, it shows that what can be accomplished. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. we all play this game because we love it. But then at some point, the baton got passed to us to make it bigger than us, right? To make it bigger than, to make the game bigger. And you guys are making the game bigger. And so for me to be on this platform together, I'm honored, because, of how great y'all are. To me, it doesn't matter where you're from, where you play. We know the journey to be great. And so mm-hmm. I never thought of it in that way. I'm just honored to be in the same breath as the greatness that's around this table. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Seriously.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So as athletes, you know, we always are asked questions about our motivation, right? Like, what's your motivation? And sometimes we like, our family is our motivation and this is our motivation. Do you guys feel like throughout our journeys, do you feel like your motivation comes from the pain, like painful losses? Or do your motivation come from joy? Like, where's your motivation source as an athlete? Where do it come from? Pal, I'll go with you first.
Okay. To me, it's really, you know, kind of the challenge, the grind that it takes, you know, trying to be exceptional, trying to do something special with our life.
Yeah.
Kind of take advantage of an opportunity that you've been kind of given, but then you had to work for and earn everything about it. So that's kind of where it comes from. Obviously, you want to utilize the pain, the struggle, the losses, the defeats, the shortcomings, the rejection, and all that. You know, we can think of growing up as a kid and you're the lanky, tall kid, skinny kid that everybody kind of makes fun of and points out and stuff like that. And then that turned out into a freaking blessing and an advantage in my life, you know? And not so much that, you know, who's laughing now, but it's like, hey, it's like, you know, it's life is good. And then you take advantage of that. And then obviously you revert to your family and you want to pass it along and you want to benefit your families and don't take stuff for granted, you know, because everything can be gone quickly. So from that standpoint, you just try to embrace your journey and maximize it.
Yeah. Tony, I mean, you've been in the finals how many times? Five times, and you won four. Did you pull motivation from the four wins, or did you pull motivation from the one loss?
A lot of people, they always ask me, what's your favorite championship? And I always say 2014. And they're like, not 2007 when you were MVP? I'm like, no, 2014 is my favorite because the way we lost against you guys. 2013, the way we lost when we were up 5 with 28 seconds. And I can see the rope. I can see the trophy coming and Pop is speaking. I don't even know what Pop was saying. I was already thinking about what I was going to do with that trophy and stuff like that. I was like, I don't know what he was saying. and the way that it happened so fast, you know, with Ray Allen shot, obviously, and then you won in game 7. Man, that summer, it was so long, that summer.
Yeah.
It was so long. And it's funny because that summer, I played with the national team every summer. And I was still chasing that gold medal because of this guy. Still didn't win a gold medal. And in 2013, after losing to you guys, I was like, really, it was really hard for me to get motivated and to go play for the national team. So I told the coach, like, I don't think I'm going to play this summer, you know? And he was like, you sure? And blah, blah. And 48 hours after, I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to be stronger than that mentally. Like, everything happens for a reason, you know? Like, we can't, like, I can't, like, not go, you know? And so I decided to go. And that year, we win the gold medal. And I was that close to not go, you know, that summer to go win that gold medal.
Something you've been chasing your whole life.
Exactly.
You were not going to
do
it.
And we win that summer.
You win that summer.
And then, so I arrived at training camp. I was so happy because I won the gold medal, you know? I was happy, you know? And I go back to the Spurs, they were still thinking about, you know, 13, our loss against you guys. Mm-hmm. And so we start training camp. Pop, the first practice, we go to film. He puts the last 4 minutes of game 6, the last 4 minutes of game 7. Mm. So I was like, we're going through again the whole thing.
That's cool.
But me, I had so much energy that I built from the summer that I carried it the whole season, you know, because I was like, we can't finish our career and people is going to remember us like we lost in 13. Like, we can't finish like that, you know? And I think the character that we showed in 2014 and the way that we played is because of that loss that I think we played the best Spurs basketball, in my opinion, my whole career. The way we moved the ball and the beautiful game and all that kind of stuff, it got created because of that. And so for me, like, motivation, it can come from big losses, or like you said, your family. Like me growing up, we grew up with nothing. It definitely creates, you know, motivation to when people say, oh, you're too small, you're too skinny, you'll never make it. From France, you know, you have to put it in perspective. You know, back then it was like not a lot of Europeans, you know, so people were super negative, you know. And so I used that as motivation to get my whole family a better life and try to make it.
Yeah. Dirk?
Well, I think at the beginning, it's just the love for the sport, the love for the game, and you're excited and working out, and then you come in the league and, you know, you want to establish yourself. It's all fun. We had a fun style. Then you make your first All-Star game. So that all motivated me. And then it was, I got to say, the losses. You know, I had to, once you establish yourself, you know, there's really only one goal always. That was winning the championship. Once you have a few All-Star games, you've done all the individual stuff. Their goal was every year to win the championship. And every year, year after year, we fall short. In 06, we're this close, we fall short. And so then in 07, which was even more frustrating to me, my MVP year, we won almost 70 games and we lose in the first round. I was almost so embarrassed that I let my teammates down, the city, and I didn't really feel like leaving my house. And but at the end of the day, after these tough losses, you know, after a few weeks, you're like, okay, what do I have to do? You know, you look in the mirror, okay, I wasn't great in final stages or whatever. Now I got to get better. I got to work on my game. I got to add something for next year. I got to be a better closer. I got to do this. So to me, it was, but I didn't win four. So, I mean, I couldn't draw anything out of happy times. I had to draw motivation out of the frustration, out of the tough times. And so all these losses every year kind of helped me to always push me and work hard in the summer, only take a few weeks off, then go back in the gym in Germany and go back in the lab and play German national team. And eventually that worked out for me in 2011.
Did you always believe? Like, like you were not going to make it, win a championship in Dallas?
The Germans are more negative.
I felt bad for you in 2007. Usually, like, you know, you look at other teams, you're like, hey, everybody's got their own problems. I felt bad for you.
You know, honestly,
I was watching the games and they were on fire. Yeah, going to say,
they were on, I mean, going on, man.
It was crazy.
And Baron Davis made a buzzer beater from half court almost every game. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. They were hot. But so in 06, we had the tough loss. Then in 07, we felt like we had. The Spurs were always our big brother. You guys always beat us. And like, we finally got to figure out, okay, we've beaten the Spurs a little bit. This is fun. I think that year was fun. I think we went like 3-1 against you guys. So I'm like, we got this year. This is our year. You know, we learned from 06 and this is our year. And then we ran in the hottest team you can imagine. And they were a matchup nightmare for us. Obviously, we were tall, me, Damp. We weren't the most, you know, the quickest guys. And they would play Monte Ellis at the five. I mean, I was like, what is happening here, right?
They were like small
they were
ball.
Running yeah. around yeah. with
like
Nelly.
Like the beginning of small ball.
Yeah,
right?
Very early.
Because, you know, Nelly was their coach. And he knew exactly how to play. Pushed me one way when I spun. They were already three guys swarming me. I couldn't even get my shots off. And they were, I mean, they knew exactly how to beat us and they were hot. And so that was one of the most frustrating losses
of my
career.
But you never lost faith though.
At the end of the day, you know, the Germans, that's what I was going to say there. They're always a little negative. So I think it's normal to have some doubts, but you know, you work through it. There's no other option. You're frustrated for a couple of weeks and then you know, after a couple of weeks of not touching the ball and frustration, you know, you get the tingling back and excitement and okay, it's time to show that the doubters you can do it. And I kept working at it.
And that's why you never know when it's going to come because I didn't think you were going to win in 2011 and that's when you win.
Yeah, exactly. You know, after 06, I'm like, I took 06 hard, but at the end of the day, I'm like, you know what? I'm just entering my prime. We just made the finals. We had a great shot of winning it all. We're looking good against the Spurs matchup-wise. So I'm like, oh, we're going to be there for years to come now. We're good. And then 07 happens. Then 08 already started to go down. We make the trade for Jay Kidlick. So, you know, we're barely making the playoffs. So you can never take it for granted. When you're on a good team that's winning, you just want to kind of put your ego to the side because you never know. I mean, and within 1 year, everything can change. So I mean, look at the Mavs just the last few years. We went to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, and last year we didn't even make the playoffs. So it's a wild ride, and you got to enjoy while you have a good team. And but it's hard at times for sure.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
I had another question, but let's stay in 2006.
Oh, no. Here's where I gotta go.
I feel like we own it. Let's stay in 2006.
Yeah,
we'll go to 11 later. Okay. Let's stay in 2006. When did you feel this series slipping away? Because you guys were up 2-0. Y'all were in control. You were up 13 in game 3. When did you feel the series slipping away?
Yeah, I mean, in that moment, honestly, you guys stepped up the pressure there. You know, everything was a little harder. You know, the denies, the defense stepped up. And I felt like we just never responded to that. And then when game 3 slipped away, we're like, oh, we're good. And then we come game 4 and we just completely get blown out. So that's when obviously the panic button was pushed. But I don't think we had the experience. We had, you know, the toughness at the time to really respond, honestly. And you guys, I mean, you played unbelievable, and you guys had great role players making shots. So that was super tough. But yeah, it was definitely there in game 3. We had everything under control, and but you guys stepped it up, and we never found a way to stop the bleeding and respond, and we didn't have the experience for it, and that was a tough one, I gotta say.
How did you feel about me in 2006?
Well, there wasn't a lot of love there, I'd say. there wasn't a lot of love there. I think there were just things said on both sides that weren't appreciated. I think you took offense to when I said we kind of gave them the championship, which I would have probably taken offense to, because you worked extremely hard. You played your butt off and carried them.
Yeah, I came back swinging in the media.
Yeah, and then, even weeks later, or maybe I said something at the training camp the following year, and I remember in the next year, and I've already moved on, obviously. Some reporter comes up to me and shoot around me like, hey, did you see what Dwayne said? And I was like, what? This is like months now later. He's like, yeah, you weren't the finisher, you weren't the leader. And I'm like, oh, wow, that came out of nowhere. So I didn't appreciate that, of course, but now, almost 20 years later, I see where both sides were just not happy with how that whole thing went down. But honestly, I say this all the time. There can't always be friendships during the highest level of competition. I mean, it's just not how it works. I'm old school. I always wanted to win. But there was no love lost there at the beginning. And I remember in the 07, the All-Star game was in Vegas.
Yep.
And I think we were the only two All-Stars ever on record to not shake hands pregame. So there was definitely, some cold times.
And mind you, we've never had a conversation to this point.
Exactly.
We've never talked.
No, we never talked about it.
And it shows you the power of the media and how they came back to me and they said, well, Dirk said this. I was like, oh, really?
Well, watch this.
Well, watch this. And then Dirk said, and then Dwayne said this. And then now it goes. And now you don't even talk to each other. We're the biggest stage in our game.
Wow.
Right? We're two of the best players in our game. And we don't even know how to just forget that, move on. And, you know, because we played each other at the highest. And that was a very intense,
emotional
series. And then the after effect was, you know, was a lot. So,
yeah.
It's part of the competition. We've seen rivalries throughout the history of the game, you know, with the Magic and Bird, you know, where they hated each other and they, you know, and then they became friends later on, whatever it might be, you know.
Yeah. Larry Bird presented Magic Johnson to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's part of the game. At the end of the day, we all want to win, you know, and we hate losing. And there's tensions in the competition, the heat of the moment. You know, it's going to be you, it's going to be me, you know. And it's tough to kind of separate, you know, okay, now we're all good. Let's go grab dinner, you know, after I'm trying to, you know, chop your head off, you know, in the game. And then the media obviously does what they do. And then, you know, and it's what it is at the highest stages, even more. Yeah. So so it's just part of the deal. But, you know, that's the beauty also about this moment. You know, all the competition is behind us
now,
right?
Yeah.
We can just share, you know, we're just four happy
laugh
fellas
about,
just
enjoying, laugh about it.
Right? And then it's humbling.
Yeah, it's good to be able to obviously even talk about it. And like you said, laugh about it and understand that that's a moment. Mm-hmm. And now we sit here at another moment where we all are attached forever, even though we already were. We played each other twice in the finals. Played each other twice. Got one. My brother Cole, et cetera.
So it
is good to be able to be in this moment and have these microphones and be able to tell our own story and talk about it our own way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stay on Dirk. I'm passing these iPads around. Every guy will get one. It would be one picture. They will look at it themselves, and then I would ask them to show it to camera, and then we would talk about it. So, Dirk, can you look at this? And then I swear I'm going to move on to the next person after this.
Yeah, okay. I remember this.
Can you show the cameras, please?
Yeah, so this is LeBron and my guy, D-Wade.
What are we doing?
Fake coffin in the 2011 finals.
How childish was that moment?
Yeah, I mean, you know, actually, so I was sick for that game four, and then I ended up not seeing this until after game four. So I saw this before game five, I believe. I didn't appreciate it.
Okay.
Political
you can still sound.
I didn't like it. It's just to me, it felt a little disrespectful. I felt like I've never had to fake an injury. I never had to fake an illness to show anything. You know, I wanted You know, I didn't feel well that day. I had a little fever, and really that was it. So I thought it was childish. And I think
it was childish.
I think I said it at one of the press conferences, but at the end of the day, that didn't add to the motivation. You know, yeah. Honestly, I was at this point, we're game five. We're two games away of my dream, from my reaching my dream, which were in 06. We were two games away. So I really didn't want this to be a big distraction for me. And I think even Coach Carlisle addressed it. I said, listen, this video came out. We're not speaking about it as a team. We're going to stay into our business, and we're here to win one or two more games. You know, we're not... This is not going to sidetrack us, and that's real. I felt it. So I went to the press conference. I said I didn't like it. I thought it was childish. But other than that, I think I kind of left it at that. I think some of the 06 things sat deeper. That bothered me a little more. But now we can laugh about it.
Yeah. We didn't like you said. It was kind of one of those things that happened. You don't know what it's going to become. And I remember walking down the hallway, and we were coming out of shoot around. And I think at this point, we're up 2-1. We lost. You guys came back, that amazing comeback in Miami, game two. But we came to Dallas and we won game three. So now, in our minds, we ain't controlling it. We supposed to be up 3-0. And so all the talk back to us is, well, Dirk is sick. Dirk Hand is this. Dirk is this. So we like, you know, I think in a sense, like in a moment of being young and having a one of those moments, it was like, oh, he's sick. And did like a fake cough. Mm. And boom. It went everywhere. Mm. You know what I mean? And then in our mind, we were tired of hearing about Dirk. We like, we're up 2-0. Why y'all keep talking about him being sick or his hand is this or that? And so it became, I think, bigger. But then once you look at it, you're like, okay, that was a moment, a childish moment that was caught on camera.
Yeah.
That you wish you can grab that moment back. But at the same time, knowing it didn't have any bearings on the series. Yeah. Like, it wasn't going to make you a greater player. You were already great. You know what I mean? But... yeah, so I just wanted to.
Yeah, no, I'm glad
the team has never heard us talk about it, and there
yeah,
we go.
I'm glad this is all out. I'm liking it. I'm liking it. We probably should have had these conversations a long time ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
We know.
Oh, really? Yeah.
No.
I was on vacation somewhere.
I did. Yeah. You know, once you're on your boat, once you're done with your season, for the most part, you're trying to disconnect. You don't want to watch that stuff. Yeah. You know, you know where you wish you were, but you're right. Not there.
You're somewhere else.
You know, and especially for us in 11, where we just came from winning back to back, and we lost to them and the conference semis and stuff. I wasn't going to watch you guys going at it where I wish my team was at the time, so I wasn't paying any attention to it at that point.
06, you don't remember how we lost? 06. Remember how we lost?
Huh.
We lost against the Mavericks, game 7, our home. We up 3 with 10 seconds to go. We supposed to play you guys in the finals. That's what I was thinking. Until Dirk goes to the basket. Manu fouls him. And Pop said 10 times in the timeout, don't foul anybody. If he goes, lay it up. We don't care. We have free throws. Yes. You know, we got 3. Doesn't matter. And Manu went to, I don't know why, try to block his shot. Goes to N1. And then we lose in overtime.
Wow, dude.
So, yeah, I didn't see that because I was still mad.
Exactly.
I was still mad.
I'm like,
why Manu went to block Dirk? We don't care. Let Dirk dunk. We don't care.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
But you're right. We all do get into our, you know, we worry about ourselves. But I think for Dirk and I, and I'm thankful that on my podcast, on my first episode, we were able to have a conversation that, like I said, me and Dirk didn't even have a lot of conversations until recently, like because of what was portrayed through the media or what, you know, actions. And so it's good to be able to have that conversation. So I appreciate
great.
You.
Nice.
That's great.
Tony, I have a picture for you.
Okay.
Mm. All right. So we played each other in the finals in 2013 and 2014. We both got the best of each other. So when you look at this photo, tell me what was going through your mind at the moment when all these things was happening. Because it happened so fast.
So fast. So in this picture.
So that's the Ray Allen shot in game 6 in the corner. And Tony Parker closed out.
He closed out short.
Okay, so like you said, it happened so fast that I came so fast to him that I was trying to not to foul him. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, Pop's going to kill me if I foul him. Because we were up three.
Yeah.
So I try to do the best I can to contest one of the best shooters in our league. And he made a hell of a shot going backwards. And every time I look at it, I'm like, man, how did he make that shot? Because I came fast on him. And he could have, like, tried to be scared too because I came so fast. I almost fouled him. And it was just one of the best shots in the NBA history.
Yeah.
And when you, as you know, you have to say in the U.S., they say a good defense, a better offense. But yeah,
that was better. Hey, look at your eyes. That's you see your eyes? What are you hoping, doing?
Please don't go in. Please don't go in.
You're begging, like, please don't. Oh, yeah. Please don't.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping so bad.
So just Ray Allen, he... And I don't know if you guys heard the story, but after practice, Ray Allen would always sit on his butt on the block. And he would backpedal to the three-point line. And this was a drill that he did. And so in this moment, the reason he was able to backpedal and get there and not worry about being out of bounds, getting his feet set without looking, was because he practiced it. He did it after practice every day.
Oh, wow.
And so it was amazing that everything happened and it was Ray Allen. Because if it was me, that would have been a whole different shot. You know what I mean? And it
would have driven left.
Yeah. I'd have put a charge. I'd have charged you. I came right at you. And so it's crazy that it was Ray Allen in that
episode. Practice that
on off his butt.
Go backwards.
Get up, go backwards without and to continue. It's repetition, right? He did it every day. And I heard he even did it in Boston. And so this is probably the only time he got a chance to take that shot.
That's crazy.
Oh. And
everything turned into a championship. It turned into a championship.
Happens for a reason.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
Great story.
So as you guys will see and also hear, some of these conversations, they do go a bit long. And so we have to separate them within parts. Some go 1 hour, some go 3 hours. And so we have a part one and we also have a part two. So we're going to cut it off right here on part one. But part two will be out very soon. So please check your feed. It might already be there.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.